Writers know it instinctively. Verbs make a sentence zing. Grammar gurus agree. Drama in writing emerges from the interplay of a subject, a noun, and a predicate, a verb. Constance Hale, the best-selling author of Sin and Syntax, zooms in on the colorful world of verbs in her new book, Vex, Hex, Smash, Smooch. She marches us through linguistic history to paint a layered picture of our language from before it really existed to the quirky usages we see online today. Constance Hale is a San Francisco-based journalist with a particular interest in the interesting edges of language reflected in her three books, Wired Style, Sin and Syntax, and the brand new Vex, Hex, Smash, Smooch. It's a great pleasure to welcome Constance Hale to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I'm thrilled to be with you.
What got you thinking about verbs specifically?
You know, when I wrote Sin and Syntax, I was just looking at all the different parts of speech and trying to sort through what I had learned about grammar in school and by studying other languages and figure out what was really important for writers to understand about grammar and what wasn't important. After I wrote Sin and Syntax and I continued to teach and I continued to edit, I kept coming back to the verb. I always had more to say about the verb. I felt that writers had lots of confusion about tenses, had lots of interesting questions about tenses, about mood, irregular verbs and regular verbs. And then I had a lot of questions myself. I had a hunch that the verb had a kind of centrality in English that maybe it didn't have in other languages, or even though there are many, many more nouns in our language than there are verbs, somehow the verb was more important. So this book was an opportunity for me to just kind of dig into some linguistics and play around and explore some of these new ideas.
So how do you define that centrality?
You know, it's interesting. The linguist, Steven Pinker, for example, will tell you that the verb is the little despot of a sentence. The verb bosses everyone else around, the verb determines the role and function of all the other words in the sentence. As a writer, I agree with that. I think of the verb more as the pulse, the heartbeat of the sentence. The verb is the drama at the core of the sentence. It's the predicament that the subject is in. You know, there's this notion of subjects and predicates, which feels really abstract to a lot of people, but the way I like to think of it is that every sentence involves a subject and a predicament, and it's the verb that expresses that predicament.
So when it comes to choice of verb, what is it that makes our choice so unusual?
You mean as a writer? What,
yes.
What distinguishes? Yeah. Well, but, you know, most of us, when we're writing a first draft, our sentences, or when we're speaking, our sentences tend to tumble out in a way that we use is a lot. We use is and are a lot in very naturally, very organically. The problem is that on the page, is and are just about the flattest verbs we could use. So that's just one example where you can go back to your writing, look at all the times when you use is and are, and then think about that sentence. Say, is there a way that I can express this sentence using an active verb, a more dynamic verb? And if you do that, you might have to move some of the parts of the sentence around a bit to make it work. But all of a sudden, not only is the sentence more exciting, the whole paragraph is more exciting. It's written in a more dramatic way. It's a lot more fun for a reader to read. So that's just one of many examples.
When you look at and you talk about this in the book, of historically, how have we seen the use of the verb change?
Well, you know, one thing that was quite interesting for me to research, I went all the way back to the evolution of language, you know, the apes in the forest. And I talked to some linguists. I'd studied some linguistics and talked to some linguists who specialize in creoles and pidgin, which is of great interest to me because I grew up in Hawaii speaking pidgin English, which is our name for Hawaiian Creole.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked, you know, is there an essential dynamic or an essential identity of every sentence in every language, including even creoles and pidgins, which aren't even languages, pidgins aren't languages, creoles are. And he said, yeah, absolutely. In every language, we have this relationship between a subject and a predicate or a subject and a verb. So that's a constant in world languages.
You make the point in the book, because I kept on while reading thinking, well, why didn't I learn this in school? Why didn't I learn this in school? And you say, well, many of the teachers can be well-meaning, and they just have some wrong-headed ideas.
Well, yeah, it's pretty interesting. If you study the history of grammar, what we learn is that, you know, back in the time of our great, great, great writers like Chaucer and Shakespeare, English didn't have a grammar. I mean, it was just kind of a cobbled together thing. People spoke and used the language without this set of rules. And then in the 1700s and 1800s, some priests and some schoolmasters decided that good languages needed grammar, and English, they wanted to elevate English to a higher plane, so they went over and grabbed Latin grammar and imposed it on English. So grammar, English grammar, was really written or created in the 18th century, and in some cases it didn't really have anything to do with the language that people were speaking naturally. So we ended up with a set of rules that work well with Latin and work less well with English. Despite this, these are the rules that English teachers have been teaching, many English teachers have been teaching for the last couple of centuries. You know, some of us learn not to split infinitives. Well, actually, we can split infinitives. It's fine to split an infinitive. It doesn't make anyone confused, or it doesn't weaken your sentence. It's fine to end a sentence on a preposition. So these are the kind of rules that have been, people think that they're supposed to learn. These rules don't necessarily make you a better writer. And sometimes the things that do make us better writers get ignored. So that's what I'm trying to grapple with in this book, in a way, is sort of pick out the things that we really should know if our interest is in writing and communicating powerfully.
Don't you think that often we get scared because we have that omnipresent image of our fourth, fifth, sixth grade grammar teacher in our mind screaming at us if we don't do it a certain way?
Absolutely, and I think it's fascinating to me why, and I think this is more true in the United States than it is in some countries, but, you know, why is it that grammar is taught the way it is? Why is it, instead of when we're kids, when, you know, kids naturally, if you think of when kids learn language, when they start speaking, when they're 4 and 5, kids have a very playful, alive sense of language and
right.
a lot of joy about language. If I remember the first time my stepdaughters, who are twins, heard me speaking French, they just collapsed in giggles. They thought it was so funny to hear me speaking nonsense. And so all of that kind of love of nonsense and love of wordplay and experimentation with language that we have as children somehow gets discouraged or beaten out of us, and we get this kind of anxiety about grammar because, after all, none of us really like grammar that much. We don't like studying it. And so in my books, I try to pull from a lot of unlikely sources. I mean, I look at Muhammad Ali as a paragon of great grammar and syntax. Mark Twain. I look at advertising copy or even great tweets. And, you know, we can find great language in all sorts of places, and we can find examples of great grammar in even sentences that seem maybe not correct. And that's how I try to sort of, I guess, you know, shake off the shackles, or, you know, get rid of the shackles of my grammar teachers and the way. But again, I think for me, I had a different experience coming up in English, because I was speaking both standard English and pidgin English. So my parents insisted that we speak standard English at home, at the dinner table, on the phone. They were both very well educated and corrected our grammar. Meanwhile, I would go to school, and I'd be talking with my playmates, and we spoke pidgin English, or we would speak pidgin English on the beach, and some of our teachers in school even spoke pidgin English. So I think I grew up with two Englishes, and I could see that they both worked in different ways, and that a non-standard English sometimes was funnier and more creative than the standard English. So I think that kind of, even from an early age, because I had this weird background in two Englishes, I never quite had that. I paid attention to my teachers, but I didn't think they knew everything.
And that background offers a fascinating perspective. The name of the book is Vex, Hex, Smash, Smooch. It is Constance Hale's new book. It's published by Norton. Constance, thank you very much for being with us this morning. A delight to have you on the program, and I wish you all the luck in the world with this project and the future ones as well.
Thanks so much.
Great pleasure. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.